This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
Well, welcome to everybody on this beautiful Sunday morning. Wow. I'm going to sing a song that I sang, I don't know if it was last time or the time before, but I've been working on my presentation, so we'll see if it's better this time. But first, a little humor. The Zen master was speaking to his disciple at a retreat, and the disciple says, "Zen master, I understand we're supposed to give up all our stuff and have a simple life, but is it okay to have email?" And the Zen master thought for a moment and says, "Yes, email's okay, but no attachments." Ain't that the way life works? So this is a Buddhist song that I found online on YouTube from a fellow in, he's in England actually, and he was a seminary student, going to be a Catholic priest, decided against it for whatever reason. And he wrote this song and played it on his ukulele, and I found it one day, and I changed the words and changed the key and added some chords. So it's still his, sort of. And this song is called "Jesus Doesn't Want Me and the Devil Doesn't Care." So I think every Buddhist may have felt this way at one time, where Jesus just doesn't want us. Out there somewhere, Buddha just sits and he smiles so kindly. I just figured it out and finally, Jesus doesn't want me and the devil, well, he don't care. Jesus wants to save my soul, Satan wants it too. Devil and an angel sitting on the shoulder, telling me just what to do. One on the left says, do the right thing, and the one on the other says, to hell with him. How am I to know which one to do? Jesus doesn't want me, and the devil, he don't care. God is in his heaven, and the Holy Spirit's out there somewhere. Buddha just sits, and he smiles so kindly. Just figured it out and finally, Jesus doesn't want me and the devil, well, he don't care. All my life I tried my best to win and never lose, but no one sits on shoulders, it's up to me to choose. When I found the Buddha way, I lost all fearful thought. With mind so still and heart so full, never to get caught. Now I know which way I am to choose. Ah, boo, Jesus doesn't want me, and the devil, he don't care. God is in his heaven, and Spirit's out there somewhere. Buddha just sits and he smiles so kindly. I just figured it out and finally, Jesus doesn't want me and the devil, well, he don't care. Jesus doesn't want me and the devil, well, he don't care. All right. I'm going to keep my day job. Now, there's another song that I'm working on, but it's not ready for prime time yet, but I want to just read you the words. And this is like such an important song. This was on Tom Jones' latest album called Praise and Blame. And yes, he is 70, and yes, he is singing, these gospel songs, because he knows his days are numbered. And I tell you, when you listen to somebody singing this kind of music, when they're 70, they mean every word. It's really pleasant to listen to. So this is called Did Trouble Me, and this is about the Lord. And I like the Lord. When I closed my eyes so I would not see, my Lord did trouble me. When I let things stand that should not be, my Lord did trouble me. When I held my head too high, too proud, my Lord did trouble me. When I raised my voice too little, too loud, my Lord did trouble me, did trouble me. With a word or a sign, with the ringing of the bell in the back of my mind, did trouble me, did stir my soul, for to make me human, to make me whole. When I slept too long or slept too deep, my Lord did trouble me. Put a worrisome vision into my sleep, my Lord did trouble me. When I held myself away and apart, my Lord did trouble me. And the tears of my brother did not move my heart, my Lord did trouble me, did trouble me. With a word or a sign, with the ringing of a bell in the back of my mind, did trouble me, did stir my soul, for to make me human, to make me whole. And of this I'm sure, of this I know, my Lord will trouble me. Whatever I do, wherever I go, my Lord will trouble me. In the whisper of the wind, in the rhythm of a song, my Lord will trouble me. To keep me on the path where I belong, my Lord will trouble me. I really like that song because what it says to me is that, hey, we need to be aware of like a lot of stuff when we're on this path, because the path of Buddhism and perhaps the path of Christianity as well is to reduce our suffering and not cause more suffering for others. So my topic today is enlightenment isn't what it's cracked up to be. You know? And the reason I want to talk about this is not because I'm enlightened. I was telling Holly earlier, I got a ways to go, a couple more lifetimes. But because I was really disappointed with enlightenment. And the reason I was disappointed with enlightenment was because a lot of people who claim they're enlightened or who are pointed at as being enlightened are jerks. You know? They do a lot of really unskillful things in the world and create a whole lot of suffering, and they're supposed to be enlightened. So why do I want to be enlightened? And what is enlightenment? And how do you get there? Okay, so a few examples. And these are examples that are on the internet. All you got to do is put, you know, enlightened people, unskillful, and, you know, and this stuff comes up. So we have Geshe Michael Roach. I talked about him. You know? Now, some people think he's enlightened. And his eyes, if you watch him on YouTube, they never sort of focus on anything. It's sort of a cool effect, you know? And he had a wife. He, you know, ordained, and he had a wife, Lama Christie. Yeah, they went and did a 3-year retreat together. They married secretly for 10 years. They took a vow never to be any further away than 15 feet from each other for 3 years. They would, if they took a plane someplace, they'd always sit next to each other. If one was in the bathroom, the other one would be on the outside waiting for the other person to come out. It was just like, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. Have you ever heard that old saying? Well, she fell in love with the yoga teacher and got divorced. You know, and Geshe Michael said, well, okay, what can you do, you know? Then the story continues that her and the yoga teacher decided to do a 3-year retreat. Go figure. And while on retreat, something happened. They had an accident. She stabbed him 3 times in the chest by accident. You know, and so the other retreatants on this 3-year retreat asked them to leave. Because, you know, they weren't being really skillful. So they decided rather than going back into the world right away, they'd go into the desert and find a cave. And unfortunately, this guy died from exposure and dehydration. And she was found delirious next to him in this cave. A lot of people thought she was enlightened. A lot of people think he's enlightened. Then we have Genpo Murzel, Zen teacher. A couple years ago, he studied right down the street at Zen Center of Los Angeles. Maizumi Roshi, one of his disciples, started his own little stuff, you know. He ended up giving a transmission to a woman who became his disciple. Now, transmission is like a Vulcan mind melt, if you like, you know, Star Trek. And this stuff is like, you know, transferred to them. Like, after they become worthy of hearing, you know, what the stuff is. And I've always wondered, I mean, what do they say to each other? I mean, what is this transmission that just opens them up and makes them awake? You know, maybe it's life sucks. You know, and from then on they're like, everything's okay. But he had sex with his disciples. He also was able to charge $50,000 if you wanted to get enlightened. He would guarantee it. One weekend, $50,000 to be enlightened. So he made like a whole lot of money. He had a whole lot of sex. And then they sort of asked him to leave. And I'm thinking, okay, so do I want to be like him? Probably not. Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche. We all know him. Movie out, Crazy Wisdom. If you haven't seen it, it's sort of a ride to go and see how the 60s and 70s used to be with these spiritual teachers, you know. And he had sex with his students, too. And he drank a lot, died from cirrhosis of the liver. He also created his own army. He had his army. These are people, I guess he used to meditate, and instead of doing walking meditation, they marched, you know? And they had uniforms, and they had a cannon, and they had all sorts of great stuff, you know? So I'm thinking, and he died really young, and everybody said, you know, he was enlightened, and he was looking at this one guy's wife, and his wife was attracted to him, and the guy said, well, the guy's enlightened, probably good for my wife, you know? And I don't know. Then Maizumi Roshi, right down the street. You know, back in the 60s, he was having like sex with some of his students and stuff, and he was at my ordination when I was ordained in 1994 as a novice monk. He was one of the observers there. I always liked him. He was a very nice guy. You know, he liked to drink though, and he died in a bathtub from drinking too much, and he fell asleep and he drowned. You know, and a lot of people considered him to be enlightened. John Dido Loring, you know, another great teacher who just died recently. He liked to smoke a lot. Now I'm thinking, if you're enlightened, would you really want to smoke? You know, because you would put cause and effect together and say lung cancer, you know? But when asked about why John Dido Loring smoked, he said, well, you know, he was a heavy smoker, and I heard him say that his smoking helped prisoners in Zen mountain monasteries in his prison outreach be able to relate to him because they smoked and he smoked. You know, and that may be okay, but I'm thinking, you know, maybe you should be an example of not smoking to the prisoners, that there's an alternative way. This is a great quote. This is from Maizumi Roshi. And Maizumi Roshi was sitting outside the Zen Center one day speaking to a student when a drunken man approached him. And if you know where the Zen Center is down the street at Normandy, it's not surprising that a drunken man would approach him. and the drunken man said, what is it like to be enlightened?
And my Izumi Roshi said, "It's very depressing." You know, I mean, what a great line that is, you know. So, okay, so who wants to be enlightened, you know? Does it give you permission to have as much sex as you want? To drink as much as you want? To take drugs? Have you transcended all the ill effects of that? Well, probably not. So now we go to Shantideva. Shantideva was a bodhisattva. Shantideva was probably enlightened. And Shantideva did it right. And you can find his stuff on the internet. There's books written by Shantideva. And here's some quotes, Shantideva. "Examine thus yourself from every side. Note harmful thoughts and every futile striving. This is that the heroes and the bodhisattva apply the remedies to keep a safe and steady mind. Where would I possibly find enough leather with which to cover the surface of the earth? But leather on the soles of the shoe is the equivalent to covering the earth with it. Likewise, it is not possible for me to restrain the external course of things. But should I restrain this mind of mine, what would be the need to restrain all else?" So do we cover the world with leather to make it a better place, a more comfortable place? Or do we put on a pair of shoes? Which is easier to do? A lot of people out there trying to cover the world with leather. "My body, thus, and all my good besides, and all my merits gained and to be gained, I give them all away without holding anything to bring benefit to others." You know? So this spiritual path of ours isn't necessarily just for us. This spiritual path is for everybody. We're working hard for everybody. And that's where the enlightened stuff comes from. Now, a couple of Maizumi Roshi students who lived at Zen Center of Los Angeles came up with 9 things to be wary of, to be cautious about, if you're living in a spiritual community. Now, I live in a spiritual community, and there's a lot to be cautious about. So, number 1,